Welcome to For the Health of It, an intimate look at public health in Cowley County, Kansas. Join us as we discuss topics that are impacting public health in our community and learn about what we do at your local health department. Hey, welcome everybody, and thank you for joining us on For the Health of It, Cowley County. This is Tom Langer, the Health Department Administrator and Local Public Health Officer. And with me today is Allie Payne. Hello, Allie.
Hello.
How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. And also with us today, we have a new voice, subject matter expert. Her name is Karen Harden, and she is a registered public health nurse here at the Health Department. How are you doing, Karen?
Doing just fine, Tom. Thank you.
We're glad you're here. We're going to have a really fun time, I guess we could say, today. As we introduce a subject, and the title of this podcast is Tainted Love, and we're going to take a close look at the problems with sexually transmitted infections and disease, not just in Cowley County, but in the population in general. Okay, so before we dig into the subject matter itself, I want to put out a couple of little disclaimers. Number one, there is a lot of construction going on in and around our facility, and I would hate that the guys with the jackhammers would bust through the walls like the old Kool-Aid guy, but there's a possibility you might hear some background noise throughout today's broadcast. We apologize for that. And I also know that this particular topic is going to be something that people may have a difficult time discussing or talking about. And we understand that. However, it is so very important that adults, especially adults with children, understand this topic, because it's something that you have to have a discussion about if you're an adolescent parent. I mean, if you have adolescent children or anybody that may be entering the phase of becoming sexually active, this conversation is absolutely vital. So try to put any of the stigma aside and understand that we're doing this with the intention of promoting public health protections. And number two, the information we'll talk about today is not just solely about what's going on in Cowley County. We try to look at everything locally, but these issues are statewide, nationwide, and even worldwide to some extent. So we will try to be as open and clear about that as possible. And finally, I'm going to actually be referencing some historical information to really illustrate just how long public health has been battling this issue that takes us all the way back to the 1940s, where the health department was founded, because one of the issues that we were absolutely created to address was the issue of what they referred to back then as venereal disease, but now, you know, it is termed sexually transmitted infection and disease. All right, we're going to move on now as we open the discussion up, and ladies, I'm ready for you to chime in, because people absolutely do not want to listen to me carry on about this all day. I'm going to be asking some questions, and hopefully we'll have all of the answers, and we can provide some insight to folks. Allie, you are our epidemiologist here. Can you provide me with some of the statistics, some of the data behind why this issue is so relevant today?
Sure. As you alluded to, this isn't just a local problem, it's a state and national problem. So I have some data on the common bacterial infections that are often spread, even locally, gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis. Kansas, with each of those, has a ranking that is assigned by the CDC. So this data is up to 2021. Kansas ranked 26th out of the 50 states for having gonorrhea infections. They also ranked 21st for chlamydia infections, and then syphilis was 34 out of 50.
That's a lot, but I'm glad we're not number one in these areas. But let's talk about the relevance. Karen, being a public health nurse, I mean, let's talk about the ramifications of what happens to an individual in their lifetime if they contract a sexually transmitted infection or disease.
Well, if they don't get it treated early enough or get it caught early enough, it can lead to infertility. Women can get pregnant, have a tubal pregnancy, which can rupture and cause life-threatening symptoms. And if they have it and pass it on to an unborn child, then the child has those ramifications also of blindness, pneumonia, multiple things that can go wrong with the baby.
Is it all bad news all the time, or, you know, is there hope for people? You know, we sit there and say,
Oh, they're easily treated as long as you're getting tested early and often. There's antibiotics that take care of all of those.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about that as we move forward in this conversation. But anyway, the why is it relevant now, Allie? I mean, you know, what's the big deal? Well, if this has been going on for as long as we've walked the earth, why are we so concerned about it?
Because many of these things are preventable, and we have the tools to take care of them, to avoid them, to treat them quickly. Testing has improved greatly over the years. We can pick these things up much sooner. So these things all around just shouldn't be happening at the rate that they are.
Are we seeing basically the same numbers over time? Are we seeing increases? What's causing us right now to want to ring the alarm bell a little bit?
There have been increases across the country. STIs have now been coined an epidemic, at least the bacterial diseases have here in the United States. Gonorrhea, syphilis have increased exponentially. Syphilis has increased 74% just since 2017. So just in the last 5 to 6 years, that much of an increase for one STI is kind of alarming.
Okay, I've got a question now, because you hit upon, you know, what I consider some of the key terms or terminology that we use when we discuss these things. So when we're talking about an epidemic, in common terms, what does that actually mean to people?
An epidemic is an event, in this case we're talking about STI infections, that is pretty regional and localized within communities. In this case, we're talking about in the United States.
Okay. But we are also seeing it here locally, so we could consider this as being something in, even in Cali County, that we're dealing with an epidemic of, say, syphilis cases or chlamydia cases. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. We talk about two different things in this. We talk about STIs, which are sexually transmitted infections, and STDs, which are sexually transmitted diseases. To a lot of folks, there's not much difference there, is there, or why do we use those terms?
Yeah, so the infection actually occurs first. That's when your body is first infected with the bacteria, the virus, or the microbe that we find harmful. And then as your cells are damaged, then that leads to disease and oftentimes the symptoms that people then develop.
Okay, so we spoke a little bit earlier, Karen, about the long-term effects that the illnesses or disease can lead to. But are all of these infections or diseases curable? I mean, is it something that people can come in and we can cure by giving them drugs or whatever? What is the current state of science connected to this list? And maybe we should share this list, because people might think it's just, you know, the big three, but what do we have out there right now that people should be concerned about?
Well, we've got, like we've spoken about, gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis. Those are bacterial. Those are treatable with different antibiotics. HIV is, excuse me, the others are curable with the antibiotics. HIV is treatable with antivirals. We have the herpes virus. Is not curable, but it is treatable with daily medications, keeps the flares down. And HPV, we have a vaccine to prevent many of those infections, which we strongly encourage. That is treatable with, if you get genital warts, you can have treatments for that, but it does lead to cancers.
So basically what I'm hearing is they're treatable, but not necessarily curable.
Some of them, right? The bacterial ones are curable.
Okay.
But you can get them again if you get a new exposure.
Okay. And so like any type of illness where you would be prescribed medication, you know, is it important for people to make sure they take the entire course of it, or is it just till the symptoms go away and then they stop?
No, they definitely have to finish the course of it. Syphilis for males can be a very long course, but you don't want to stop it midway, because then we get resistant strains. So females, it's a shorter course of penicillins, if possible, just because we don't give the other antibiotic to women of childbearing age.
Okay. Emily, do you have the list of all of them? I mean, I know it's quite a few, and it seems like we're adding more and more to it with each generation that comes along. I mean, just not too long ago this year, we had, you know, we had monkeypox pop up, you know, and the population that it was affecting was, you know, folks that we would might say have alternative lifestyles, but it is something that we need to be aware of and we need to talk about, because we saw that with the advent of AIDS and HIV. You know, it began in a distinct population, but then it spread to the greater population. And so we're always concerned that anything that's new coming along might follow that same pathway. But can you give us a list of what's all out there right now?
Yeah, so Karen actually touched on most of them. There are some others that can also be spread sexually. The different hepatitises A, B, and C can be spread sexually. She touched on herpes. There is actually herpes simplex virus 1 and also 2. A common myth with those is that herpes 1 is just the cold sores around your mouth, but that can also be spread sexually into the genital region. And then herpes simplex 2 is the virus that does typically cause the genital lesions. And then you touched on monkeypox. We have HPV, HIV, and then the different bacterial infections as mentioned.
Okay, so they fall into two categories, basically bacterial and viral. And it would seem like the viral might be the ones that are a little bit more long lasting. Would that be something that, am I saying that correctly?
Yes, because those are treatable, not curable.
Right. Okay. And I think that's enough just to kind of make you all go, ooh, let's pause and think about this for a minute, because now we've talked about what they are. The fun part about the conversation kind of moves into, all right, let's talk about transmission and how it's occurring. To me, one of the most alarming statistics is that over 50% of these infections are occurring in that age group of 15 to 24 years old. What are your thoughts on that, Karen?
Well, that age group tends to be at higher risk, but just because they are out and about more, don't think anything's ever going to happen to them. We were all that way at that age. So you'll see the increase in that age group for that reason.
Absolutely. I know, and I know you're a parent as I am, and our children have pretty much grown. You know, and we've survived it, thank goodness. But talk about the problems that we have communicating with each other, number one, and why we've got to really break down this barrier of being embarrassed or afraid or looking at this as some kind of a taboo subject, and why it's important that we not only become educated ourselves, but we take the time to make sure we educate our children.
We do need to educate, and I think a lot of the lack of people coming into the office is because they think they will be judged, that their lifestyle that they've chosen is not our lifestyle and that we'll judge them for that, and that's not the case. We're just here to help educate, test and treat if we need to.
Yeah. Allie, I'm going to pull you in on this because you're the youngest of the cohort sitting at the table today, and When you were in school, I mean, think back to your high school days and college days. You know, what was the mindset of folks in your age range at that time? Were they, you know, was it just, gosh, wild, abandoned, and not really worried? Nothing can harm us. What do you think kids think?
Well, since that was in the last 10 years, that's not so bad. I would say that in that group, there were a few folks that I remember they would contract these bacterial infections, but it was, you go and take your medicine and then it's over. So it's not really so much of an issue because we didn't have some of the viral STI spread, at least not that we knew of. But it was also just kind of one of those things that was no big deal. It wasn't going to happen to me. I'm not having sex with a ton of people. I'm only having sex with 1 to 3, so I'm okay.
Oh boy. All right. So now let's talk about this, because this leads right into the next topic or part of this, and that's transmission. Most people might think, okay, the sexually transmitted infections are going to have, you have to have intercourse to transmit it. Is that true or false?
It's false. you get the direct transmission from skin-to-skin contact with people. It can be genitals, mouth, rectal, or just the body fluids. So if you're having oral sex only and they've got a cold sore, you can get herpes. I mean, it just happens.
It happens.
So you've got the transfer from oral herpes to genital herpes.
Yeah, some of these are, you mentioned, Karen, that they're you know, transmitted just by secretions or blood or whatever. I mean, so in reality, people, I think, have to really understand that if they engage in this type of activity entirely unprotected, they're at risk.
Yes. Any kind of sexual contact, even if it's not penetrative, they are at risk to spread the disease.
I remember back, I'm going to date myself a little bit because I was a much younger man when HIV/AIDS became a thing back in the 80s. And the time period that it took for these diseases to manifest, I think, was probably one of the more scary things because, you know, we found out then that it doesn't happen overnight. Do you guys know off the top of your head, Allie, you're the one that looks into the books on these things, what some of the infection periods might be? Is it like immediate or does it take longer for some? I know that in some of them we talk about it could be years before it manifests. Do you have any, and if you don't have it right in front of you, that's okay. But I know Karen, that we've seen that, you know, in public health and in health in, you know, general. So I want people to understand that this isn't something that you know may happen. You had a wild weekend and then next week you get it. No, not all the time. This can take months or even years sometimes to manifest. Isn't that right?
Correct. And it depends on your body and your immune system. Some people can actually clear things without ever having any symptoms, or they never have symptoms and they have full-blown infection. You just don't know. That's why you should always be using condoms and being protective of yourself, because you're the only one that's going to.
Now, condom usage. That's a really interesting topic. And, you know, I don't know that there would probably be any youngster that grew up that didn't laugh or giggle or chuckle, you know, I mean, because, well, number one, I know that they all believe they've invented this stuff. They think they've discovered something that nobody else has ever known about as they become sexually aware and active. Sadly, they don't realize at that point the risks they're taking, I do believe. So let's talk about condom usage and their proper use, because there's probably a lot of guys out there that don't know this. So we talked about this in the office not too long ago. How often, or, you know, how what's the life cycle of a condom? I mean, I don't know.
One time. Okay, there we go. Only. Yeah. No matter if it's oral sex, anal sex, whatever. Vaginal sex, you've got to change it in between every single act. If it's the same person at the same time, you still need to be changing that condom each and every encounter.
And what people don't know is, you know, I mean, you know, what do they protect them from? Some guys probably think, oh, I just do that so, you know, somebody doesn't get pregnant or whatever. And granted, that may be one of the protective measures, but it's not really the sole purpose of the condom.
Correct.
Yeah. And so those things can rupture, they can break. You know, you like you say, you use them once and that is it.
That is it.
Yeah. And so, you know, make sure that if that is your preferred methodology, have a adequate supply. I chuckle here again. See, I'm human about it. There's a little bit of humor that's involved in all of that, but it's not a laughing matter. It really truly is. What are some other ways, you know, some direct contact, indirect contact, myths, things like that we should discuss about how people pick these up and pass them along?
Well, I know a lot of people think that if they didn't see anything on the person, that they didn't have anything. Oh. If they're not complaining of anything, they don't have anything. If they say they're clean, they don't have anything. You don't know what you have unless you're getting tested or unless you are completely absent of any sexual encounters. Then you won't have anything.
So getting tested.
That is
tested,
the only yeah. way. You've got to test because many people don't have symptoms. In fact, most people don't have symptoms until they've had it for quite some time.
Okay. So that's part of it.
Yes.
And especially if people are not in monogamous relationships.
Correct.
Or they've been outside, you know, and they have multiple partners. And multiple partners is two, I mean, honestly. And you don't know the other person's sexual history. I think that's probably one of the most difficult situations to be in as an adult. Probably when dating, is how do you cross that topic? You know, hey, let's go meet for dinner. And then, you know, hey, you know, how many sexual partners have you had? Or, you know, have you been tested? It's not something that you just politely weave in with, you know, well, how was your day and what do you do? But I do think that that's something that people probably have to consider and understand that you need to have that kind of a conversation. Allie, you've been awfully quiet. I'm going to draw you into this conversation. Tell me, you know, what are your thoughts on this? I want people to hear differing opinions.
I'm being reminded of an exercise that we did in middle school one time, and it was, okay, everybody line up and get a partner, and you two are partners, and you are engaged in sexual relations. Okay, now go and get another partner to your group. And by the time the exercise went on, it was everybody in the group had been connected to everybody, either directly or indirectly. So I'm thinking that, you know, we're talking about one person's sexual partners, but we're not considering the partners of those people and the partners of those people. So you might not be directly impacted by those folks, but if they have engaged with any of your partners previous to you, then you're absolutely susceptible to anything they might have as well.
Okay. How does this, today's society, we are bombarded. I mean, kids all have cell phones and most of them are smartphones and they have access to the internet. And we have things like, you know, Instagram and TikTok and I don't even know them all, where it seems like they are bombarded 24/7 with, you know, people that are, I guess I'll use the word promiscuous, you know, and then all these different activities that go on. Also, now I've never had to use one. You know, that's the benefit of it being married over 30 years. But the apps that exist now for people to meet and to date, they all seem to have that slant to them that it's, you know, effortless pickups. What are your thoughts on those? And do you think they contribute to part of what we're experiencing now? Allie, I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the terms that's actually thrown around when talking about apps is hookup culture. So some of them just naturally, that's kind of why you go there. It's kind of unspoken, like Tinder especially.
Okay.
That's the app that you would choose if you were trying to find somebody to connect with quickly. It's really popular for people who travel or go to new communities because they can meet different people.
And that in itself is an interesting thing because think about how mobile we are and how people can go. I mean, it's, you know, we're sitting here in Cali County, but what is it? It's a 45-minute drive to Wichita, you know, or to another community, you know, further away. It's not far, and that's the thing. It's even in our town when we talk about disease spread of any type, we talk about how mobile we are and how we are subject to people from all over the area. I know that a couple of years back, prior to the pandemic, we had a real strong concern and a problem because we did have a syphilis outbreak within our community, and it was centered. I thought immediately when we saw this, I said, oh gosh, this is going to be, you know, college age kids, and I was shocked when it was middle school kids. And, you know, that was really, an eye opener for me when the state health department had to come down and we set up shop and we had to do all the disease investigation for the middle schoolers. It was terrible. And the look on parents' faces as they found this information out was, you know, something to remember. But sadly, I don't know that we spend enough time really making sure that we tell people about, hey, how this can be transmitted and the protections to take. What other things are there? I mean, you know, Karen, we were talking about some odd things that we've seen or we've learned through, you know, our time in public health and your time as a nurse in treating people, because we have to have these conversations with you. And you mentioned this to me, the importance of people being honest when they come in for an appointment. Talk about that.
Yes, people have to be honest with us when we're asking those questions, because it helps us decide what they need tested, treatment, if we need to contact other people. You just have to be honest. You're an adult conversation with a healthcare provider. You need to be honest with us and your partners, just so we have the best care for you.
There's an industry that has arrived. I mean, I guess it's been around for quite a while. You know, it used to be that you had to either order things on, no, you didn't. You ordered them by mail and they were delivered by mail in discreet packages. Or then they had little stores that would pop up and you could go and buy, you know, magazines, films, AIDS, sexual AIDS, things like that. Let's discuss those, because we've seen some interesting things. I mean, not the things, but... You can laugh at me. How do I want to say this? Thankfully. Okay, let's just say there are sexual aids out there that people use. Do those pose a risk? And if so, what and how?
They definitely do, because it is a contact. If you are using sex toys and you are using them with multiple people and there's no cleaning in between, you're going to spread something that way. You've got to, if you're using AIDS, you have got to keep those clean and use them with one person only. Cannot be sharing. It's just as bad as sharing a needle. Don't share. No sharing.
What's the best way to clean items like that?
They have specific cleaners and tell you exactly what to do to clean those. They are very good about cleaning it. They need to be washed thoroughly, and then there's sprays you can use to clean those that kill everything that's on them.
Yikes. I mean, it takes all the fun out of it, I guess. That's terrible. I mean, it does seem, it's like, you know, people have to really say, wow, stop and think about everything that goes into that and having that type of a conversation. Now, we know that it, you know, that it's spread and it can be, it doesn't necessarily need to be intercourse for the disease to be transmitted. Let's talk a little bit about our health impacts, because that's what's really important to us. Allie, do you have some data or some numbers that you want to again share as far as, you know, how this impacts the population health?
You've kind of already alluded to it, that the 15 to 24-year-old cohort is responsible for approximately 42% of new STI infections, well, STIs each year. So those are the groups that are often impacted by the infection, but those are actually the groups that are the least susceptible to developing severe disease, just because they are younger and ideally their immune systems are a little bit better.
What about our older population, especially childbearing years, having it, not picking it up, maybe becoming pregnant, or having a failed pregnancy? Those would be, I think, Karen, real severe impacts.
Definitely. If a woman doesn't know she has an STI, can lead to pelvic inflammatory disease. She can get very ill. You can get septic from that. It can invade your uterus. So if you are pregnant, the uterus can get infected. It can cause a stillbirth, premature birth, low birth weight in the baby. If you give birth to that baby and you've not been treated, then the baby will have problems afterwards. They can contract syphilis, hepatitis, herpes, all through childbirth.
So a lot of those can be congenital?
Yes.
Okay. And I think that's something, too, that whenever a woman visits with her healthcare provider, be it her OB or her physician, or even if they come in to the health department and part of our family planning group, they have to have those conversations with the provider.
They do, and those providers are supposed to be testing them throughout the pregnancy to make sure that they don't have it as soon as they find out they're pregnant, and then don't contract it through the pregnancy.
As far as on the gentleman's side, you know, I think they have to understand too that it can, like several of these, can lead to issues with fertility and sterility.
Yeah.
And so if they want to be parents, if they want to be fathers, and they can't, you know, they really need to make sure that they are taking care of themselves, especially if you're young. You know, don't take the risks of contracting something that will never allow you to be a dad. You know, Father's Day was just passed, and one of the greatest things in my life is having, you know, having my kids. That's amazing. You know, all the work, everything else, nothing compares to the accomplishment of being a parent. So we know a little bit about, you know, the health impacts, both short term and long term. We need to talk. Oh, wait, stop. I forgot. We were talking about age groups, you know, and how could I bypass my own, you know, staring right down the pipe at 65 and I pick up all these, journals and read about what's going on in, you know, in people my age now, as far as what's affecting our health. And lo and behold, I came across the study that talked about how in the age 65 and plus, we're seeing an increase in sexually transmitted infections, especially in retirement communities. And I'm like, what? And, you know, the real story behind that was the fact that when we were kids, it was pounded into us that we had to be so proper and so right all the time that we could never do anything sideways. And like that worked a lot. But, you know, now that we enter a different phase of our lives, well, some folks are widowers or some are divorced and they're single now as they're older, and they'll go into these retirement communities. And we found out they're engaging in unprotected sex there. And they're also picking up, you know, again, chlamydia and gonorrhea and syphilis. And it's just amazing, because here it is affecting those of us, you know, 65 and older. And I think, again, that it just reiterates how this is part of human sexuality. This is part of the human existence. No matter what your age, you've got to be aware of what's going on and the risks that you're engaging in when you engage in unprotected sexual activity. So I got that plug in for us old guys. Let's talk about prevention, because that's really what we do at the health department. We have a family planning clinic, right?
Yep.
Can you explain what that is to people?
Our family planning program is a program that is protected. So that means that if you wanted to come in and receive services, we could keep that 100% confidential. We wouldn't have to bill your insurance if you have it, if you didn't want that. We could make sure that there is nobody else on your account. So if you are a spouse to somebody, or if you are a teenager, that means that we wouldn't let those in your family know. We'd be careful not to send any mail to your house, things like that. You would be responsible for contacting us anytime you felt that was necessary, and we would go from there. The program's really neat because it's income-based, so it's really designed to prioritize health and not so much collect payment. So if you did have any kind of issues or concerns in any of these areas, you could just give us a call. It's that simple, and we would work with you to get that appointment scheduled in a way that works for you, and we would do so confidentially and take care of you as best we can.
Karen, I was reading something that, you know, we talked about recently, and that's what it is that keeps people from reaching out to get help if they're concerned. And I think you answered me with one word: they're ashamed. You know, here again, oh my gosh, you know, no, we don't want anybody to find out that I did something like that. What are your thoughts on that specific topic, and how people should set that aside to reach out for help?
I do think that is a lot of it, that they think they're dirty if they have an STI, that people will think that they're out there, you know, seeing everybody they can. And that's not the case. We don't think that way. We just want to help people. You do need to protect yourself. That's what we're here for.
Now, one of the things I think folks may not understand about the family planning program And our role at the health department is that we actually do it because we are encouraging people to be to live healthy lives, to be able to have families. And we understand that these diseases can exist that can it, that could impact that. But we also like Allie said, we protect everybody's identity and their privacy. It is, you know, we take that to the grave with us. And so I want folks to understand that, you know, simply calling and making an appointment because you have a concern and you want to come in and talk to somebody or have a test, that's nobody will know about that. You know, that's between you and the provider, and it's something that is absolutely protected. And we will do this for anyone regardless of age. And I know that's an issue that we've had in the past, especially if we're dealing with a younger, like adolescent or high school aged group, where say a young man or a young lady decides they are worried and they call in and they set an appointment because they don't need to have mom or dad's approval to do that. And then when a parent finds out, they get a little angry with us. So let's talk about that, because I think it's something that people need to know, that, you know, we see everyone, and that's important to us. That's why we're concerned about, you know, that adolescent group. And we have seen people have this. How young, Allie? What's the, I know we talked about this.
In family planning, last year we did see somebody that was age 12.
Yeah, 12 years old. So, you know, that's I always use the term, oh my gosh, babies having babies. We don't want to have that happen, but we know that the world is not a perfect place, and there are a lot of bad things that might happen, especially to children. And so we are always on high alert when it comes to that, to make sure that if we have a child come in that we, you know, that maybe have been abused, that we treat them with the utmost dignity and respect, and we protect them as we are required to do. So that's something that's a real hard part, probably could be an entirely different conversation, especially in today's world where you see a lot of sadly human trafficking, but those things have to be considered. Now, prevention is what we do, and how do we go about doing that? Let's say I'm a worried young man, and I don't know what to do. What would be your advice to me? The first thing that I should do.
I would say, first of all, limit your partners. If you're not going to abstain, you've got to limit your partners. You've got to get educated.
How do I go about doing that?
Come in here and we will let you know the ins and outs of everything.
So how do I set that up, Allie? How do I come into the health department?
There are a few different ways that you can do that. You can inquire on our website. You can use our mobile app to request an appointment. At that point, you could say what kind of appointment and some of your concerns. So we would have those things beforehand, or you could just give us a call or come into either of our offices.
It's confidential?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And then what if I, you know, what about prevention measures? Does the health department provide condoms to people?
We sure do. And if you run out, you come back and you can get more.
Well, that's good. but what about, and that's for young men, young ladies, older men, anybody,
anyone,
right?
That is needing them.
Yep, that's exactly right. So I mean, we would hope that if you have the means, you can procure those for yourselves, but we want people to know that, hey, they are available through the health department. That is one of the things, and we again are trying to wash away that stigma or that, you know, shame that goes with it. It is part of who we are. We are biological beings. You know, we reproduce and we are active. So these are things I think that are absolutely important.
And if you need condoms, you actually don't have to make an appointment. You can just come in and we'll get you taken care of and you'll be in and out.
Just that quickly. All right. Yeah, that's good to know. Let's talk about testing. When, how often? You know, who should? You know, let's talk about that. Do it from both sides. Do it from the male side and the female side, as far as what we would prescribe, what you as a health professional, Karen, would tell people that they should do. Okay, if they're active.
Any active male or female should be checked at least yearly. And then as needed, if they've had an exposure, which means they've had unprotected sex, they've been told that someone has something, they should be checked, even if they're using condoms. If they think they have symptoms of an STI, such as burning with urination, discharge, pain in their abdomen, sores that are coming up, they've got to be checked. And if it doesn't show then and they're still having symptoms later, they can come back and get checked. Because we've talked about some people's bodies take the symptoms and kind of deal with it for a little while, and then it flares up later. So you can get periodic checks as needed.
Okay. Let's talk about symptoms. What should people look for? You mentioned, are there just a handful? Are they all consistent across all of them? Or do these specific diseases and infections have different symptoms?
Unfortunately, a lot of the time they have no symptoms. That's why you should get checked periodically, no matter what.
How long would it take for an infection to take hold?
Usually 2 or 3 weeks after, they may start seeing symptoms. The next day or two, they're probably not going to, unless it's like trichomonas or something like that. That might show up a little quicker, but 2 or 3 weeks, we don't recommend you wait. We can always retest in a month if it didn't show up the first time, because we don't want you out there having sex unprotected and spreading it to many people.
What kind of tests do we do? I mean, what's involved?
We have, we'll take a urine specimen that checks for gonorrhea and chlamydia, and then we can take a blood specimen which checks for HIV and syphilis. And if there's a strong risk of possibility of you having sex with an IV drug user or someone who's had sex with an IV drug user, we can do hepatitis C also.
Yeah, we hear a lot more. We see commercials on TV a lot about hepatitis medications. There's different types of hepatitis, right?
Yes, there are. Hepatitis A, B, and C are the most common.
Explain to folks what exactly they are if they don't know.
All of those can be transmitted sexually. Hepatitis A is actually in contaminated fecal matter. So if you're having sex with someone, you can get it that way. If you're touching someone that is sick, and you know, if they're having sexual intercourse and you're touching, you can get it that way. Hepatitis B and C are generally bloodborne, but if you've got cuts in your skin, you can catch that sexually too.
Okay, so we also provide, in the preventative realm, vaccinations, you know, which some people say, oh no, yeah, vaccinations. Let's talk about those real quickly. We've got HPV?
Yes, we have HPV.
And that is given to whom?
Anyone 9 years to 46 years.
And what's the course?
It depends on the age. There's 2 shots if you start younger. If you start over 15, then there's a 3rd shot. Mm-hmm.
And it prevents
what? 9 strains of HPV.
HPV, which we talk about, again, leads to the a lot of different things. But mostly it's cancer.
Yes, you know, different kinds of cancers. Oral, yeah. Throat, genital.
Exactly. And then what else do we have?
We have hepatitis A and hepatitis B vaccines.
Right. And hep B is generally given to whom?
Children get it all the way up to adults.
Okay. And it's one, I think, that is publicized quite a little bit as well, because we see it in ads, especially for, again, adolescent to early adulthood, where kids are going off to school or to college. There are a lot of institutions that require that vaccination before they will allow a kid to be admitted. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is required in schools now.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that I think that if parents aren't aware of, they should be. And especially high school students should understand that too. Make sure that, hey, it's their health, it's their bodies. They need to be making sure that they have all of the necessary vaccinations to protect themselves. Is there anything that we've missed or that we didn't talk about on this? This is such a broad topic to try to squeeze it into a 40-45 minute conversation is tough.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on the HPV vaccine that we were just talking about. When it came out in the early 2000s, it was said to be a vaccine that was for women and girls, but that is since not the case. So if you are a parent to sons, they absolutely should be getting that as well, as it protects against penile cancers too. So it's not just the cervical cancers or the vaginal cancers. It does impact your sons.
Anything that we've missed? Anything that I might have overlooked? it's a broad topic. It really is. And again, it's one of those that's more of a difficult conversation for a lot of people to have, but you really do. You know, if you have a conversation with your partner, regardless of status, I mean, have it. Be honest with your providers when you go in. I think the takeaways that we would have in wrapping up today's podcast would be number one, be educated. Understand the risks that you're taking. You know, I'm not sitting there saying, you know, that I'm such a puritanical individual that you know everybody must totally abstain. I know that's not going to happen, and I'm not that naive to think that kids and adults are not going to be sexually active. But understand the risks that you're taking. Is that so? And get educated, and you can get educated by all different places. You can stop by the health department and pick up pamphlets and brochures. Have a conversation with a healthcare professional about what you you should. If you have concerns, set an appointment. Come in and be tested. I think that's the big takeaway. Be tested. If you're sexually active, understand that that does affect your health, and you need to have routine examinations and testing. You know, like Karen said, at least once a year. And more frequently if you have concerns.
Right. Don't wait to have symptoms.
Yeah, don't wait. Then it's too late. The other part of it is don't be ashamed. If you're concerned, seek help, seek treatment. You know, it's much better, I think, to face that head on and get it taken care of before it becomes problematic and before it would have long-lasting health effects. Take a look at what's available for protective measures, condoms. Oh, birth control. We didn't really talk about birth control a lot. I do think that it's important that if you're on birth control, this is to the ladies, and I'll let you say this, Karen, it doesn't protect you.
No, birth control only protects against pregnancy. It does not protect you from STIs.
Yeah, so that's the big thing. Remember that as well. Well, it's been enjoyable to have this difficult conversation with you guys. I hope you know that what we've said and we've covered today will help the individuals that listen to this, and we'd certainly love to have their feedback. I know this is, like I say, it's a tough one, and for us to dive headlong into the podcast pool tackling this subject is kind of risky on our part, but I think it's well worth the risk because of where we are as a society. So this is going to conclude our podcast called Tainted Love. That's what we had titled it, because, you know, that's exactly what it can be. And we hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be back and join us for our next episode, in which we will be talking about back to school. Ooh, it'll be sometime in July after the holiday. The next podcast will come out, and we'll be talking about all the things you need to do to get your kiddos ready to get back to school, including, you guessed it, back to school checkups and vaccinations. So until then, stay well. Thank you for joining us for this edition of For the Health of It, Cowley County. We hope you found it useful and that you'll tell your friends and give us a listen again during future episodes. As always, we end today's segment by replaying a recent Public Health Minute, which is a weekly radio message focused on keeping you healthy. So, until next time, stay well, everyone. Human sexuality is part of our existence, but contracting a sexually transmitted infection and subsequent disease can result in life-altering consequences. Individuals need to have a clear understanding of the risks of being sexually active. Over 50% of STDs occurring happen to adolescents and young adults aged 15 to 24, but we're seeing an alarming increase in all segments of the population, including over age 65. Public health has faced the prevention battle against chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis for as long as we've existed. Yet with each generation, new infections like monkeypox are discovered and disease spread grows. Being able to have an open and serious discussion about the topic is the theme for the latest For the Health of It, Cowley County podcast. We invite you to tune in and give it a listen. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Sexually transmitted diseases may not be comfortable to discuss, but you need to be educated and take precautions if you're going to protect yourself and your loved ones. Hosting difficult conversations about difficult subjects, it's one more way that the health department works every day to help you stay well.